I know we're singing some of these carols during the Advent season. I'm not sure if we're supposed to do that. This church always breaks the rules. I just love singing Christmas carols during the Advent season. Is that all right with you? Okay. Thank you. Let's just keep singing. And in fact, this one's a beautiful one. If you read a little piece at the bottom, you can, Edmund Sears, by the way, a newly minted Unitarian minister out of Congregationalism, because he was a these are the early Congregationalists, but who became the Unitarians. He served a number of congregations in the Boston area and wrote Christian hymns emphasizing various social implications for the early social gospel people. And if you really read into the hymn, Beneath Life's Crushing Load, you see, and it talks about the poverty, helping the impoverished and lifting people up. That's really what this hymn is about. So it's a beautiful hymn. As well as a hymn about angels. And speaking of angels, I'm going to have to work on this because Pat McCurdy was a preacher last week, and boy, she did a wonderful job. I've heard it great. So there you go. All these wonderful ministers in the congregation, you're all ministers, you know. How many of you believe in guardian angels? Well, one of the creepier experiences of my life included meeting with an elderly person in my former church who actually and visually saw the I want to say miniature, but in the South they say miniature guardian angel hanging out with me whenever she saw me, right there, standing on my shoulder. And whenever I visited her home, so she would greet both of us. I told her that I didn't believe in these sorts of heavenly angels, whether they were guarded or exposed. But she told me that I was hurting the feelings of my guardian shoulder angel and shouldn't speak like this because he was listening to our conversation, you know. And I said, I can't help it. Heavenly guardian angels or any other type of angel, it's pure fiction and makes no reasonable sense to me. And then she said, well, you need to have a little faith, John, especially being a minister. And you may not believe in your angel, but he believes in you, which is always, you know, the right response. And then she kicked me out the door. Go home. You can leave now. And I have to confess, I made a mistake, and have made many of them. But this particular conversation was certainly one of them, because I don't see guardian angels or other angels, for that matter, in the heavenly realm in that sense. But people talk about sensing, those who have gone on to the next experience, who have passed away, passed on, those beloved amongst us. And then what about the earthly angels who live with us as well? If you want to know a little bit more about it, after I'm done with my comments, Margie Annis will be helping us memorialize four of our angels in the congregation who died over 2015-16, who moved on, but who are angels in our midst and who still impact our congregation. They're earthly angels, and they remind us of our better selves when we meet up with them. And that's why it's a true gift to be a minister here in a church where you meet so many of those earthly angels who wander right in here, and it rubs off on you, you know, somehow. That's kind of why you like to be around on Sunday mornings, because then it helps you get through the next week and all the weeks after. Don and Lakin, you know, Pat Steiner, we've been doing these classes Monday with Joe Ellenbaugh's. And Don brought up something at one of the classes, and he said, if you add an extra O, and I put that in the essay, to God, you've got good, right? And that's what angels do. They bring this goodness. In the earlier scripture reading shared by Laura, the compassion that we all experience, that we're capable of living into if we just let it all happen. The author of Hebrews says, let mutual love continue. Do not neglect to show hospitality to strangers, for by doing that, some have entertained angels without knowing it. And to paraphrase the angelic, if one wants to call it that, likewise, it becomes a part of us when we love and forgive others and conduct our lives in just and kind and humble ways. Literally, angels are spiritual beings, superior to humans in power and intelligence, typically benevolent, sometimes dreadful, though endowed with wisdom and knowledge of earthly events. They are not infallible, for they strive with each other, and like any good parent, God continually has to make them behave themselves. While some angels serve as intermediaries between God and humans, there are other angels designated as guardians of particular human beings. And in art, angels are depicted as having the shape of extraordinarily good-looking humans. Think Benedict Cumberbatch, for example, I guess. Moving beyond Doctor Strange, though with the addition of wings and halos and lots of light. The word for angel means in Latin messenger, and therefore this accentuates a supernatural being conveying a message from God to humans. In the Hebrew Bible, Jacob wrestles with the angel of God, sees visions of angels going up and down a ladder, and seems to have been appointed himself as God's human messenger. Now in Job, the being tempting him has become demonic and therefore is a contrast to angels who are understood to be instruments of God. In later Hebrew material, we have the apocalyptic book of Daniel, where for the first time angels receive names, actual names like Gabriel, God's primary messenger. The name Gabriel, it means who is like God. And Michael, that's not John Travolta, by the way. Michael is God's holy fighter. And the name actually means God is my strength. During the time of Daniel's writing, angels were considered the sons of God, inferior to God, but also immortal, and therefore superior to humans. In the Christian Bible, there are four separate cases of angelic interaction which deal with the births of John Baptist and Jesus. In Luke, an angel, Gabriel, appears to Zechariah to inform him that he will have a child, even though he's of ancient age. And this proclaims the birth of John the Baptist. And also in Luke, Gabriel visits Mary to foretell the birth of Jesus. Again in Luke's gospel, at the birth of Jesus, angels arrive along with the shepherds at that birth, you know. And then moving a little bit further in Matthew, the angels are the ones that warn Joseph to get the baby out of town. Go to Egypt because Herod's going to kill all the babies. And then the angels reappear and say, okay, it's safe now. Herod has died, so you can go back to town. our Christmas carols this morning. Think about all of those carols that have to do with angels. And if we get rid of the angels, well, we would be missing a lot of beautiful Christmas carols. In Matthew, while Jesus is spending 40 days in the desert being tempted by the devil, angels come and minister to him. And in Luke, an angel comforts Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane the night before he is crucified. In Matthew, an angel speaks at the empty tomb following the resurrection of Jesus after rolling back the tombstone. And then in the branches of Christianity, including Christian Science, the New Church, and the Latter-day Saints, angels appear in human form with spiritual bodies. In the Baha'i faith, Theosophy, Islam, and the Brahma Kumaris, angels are prominent as well. Guardian angels seem to show up even today, and many people experience guardian angels. I have not, but they do. And you don't have to be religious to have one, by the way. How about that? They are assigned to protect and guide a particular person or group or kingdom or country. And though some may attempt to trace them all the way back to Genesis, these angels are not personally named or designated, though one can argue they deliver individuals and groups from danger. These guardian-like angels did not really appear until the 5th century in Christian circles as well as in rabbinic literature. So that gives you a little bit about the angels. And where do I get all this marvelous material? Wikipedia. Oh. Go read it for yourselves. It goes on for about 500 pages. I think everybody wants to tune in on angels, and it seems to be pretty important stuff. And maybe you can teach me a few things about angels. But you're my earthly angels. You're sitting there putting up with Sunday sermons every week. Really, I mean, come on. You walk into church on a Sunday morning. How marvelous are all of you? How do you do it? You're angelic. And the celebration of angels event this morning, it began with Rita Meach remembering and honoring Candy Lakin. My first encounter with Candy was walking from the post office and seeing right there on the sidewalk Candy, and it looked like a person running, which is appropriate, but you can also have a person riding a bike because, as Don said, you taught her how to ride a bike, didn't you? Long time ago. Biking, swimming, she was on the swim team, right, and all. Every physical event possible. 4 triathlons. I'd do a triathlon relay. Okay, I'm done after a quarter of a mile. Pass on the baton. You can finish. Just a marvelous person. And so many of you have told me that Candy was the epitome of what angels represent. Goodness, purity, selflessness, intelligence, and beauty. Rita Meach, otherwise known as Ms. Green, because of her local recycling business and her advocacy for taking care of our environment, explained to me that Candy's influence inspired her to seek beauty and wonder and significance in items that had been discarded for recycling, and recreate them in ornament form, and then match these reconstituted decorations with members and friends of our congregation, both living and deceased, who somehow resemble the artistic piece of work. Ah, the way artistic minds work. I know all about it. My mother was an artist. I get at least part of it. And therefore, it should be emphasized that though this is a memorial tree or has been designated, so if you find your ornament on it, don't get upset. Rita wanted to also honor others, since as an artist she kept finding more and more discarded items which metaphorically resemble earthly angels in our congregation who live and move and still have their flesh and blood and bone being among us. For example, she has a piece here about John. I'm not going to read it, but it's about John the Rat. That's, by the way, my ornament. I'll read part of it if you want. Yeah. John, his totem is the rat. Rat's unflappable. Easygoing, happy, social animal, talks a lot. Disarmingly honest, frank, easy to get along with. You can kick him around a bit. Rats are highly cooperative with others in joint endeavors, have a tendency to wear their heart on their sleeves. Just as long as there isn't an angel sitting up there, I get a little creepy there. They love a good challenge so they can vanquish an obstacle. They are wise advisors to their associates. They teach others, but they can also be taught. That's very important there. Then there's a bat. I think she put a Yoda and a Batman on the rat, maybe to temper things a bit. and size matters not. I'm not sure. Judge me by my size, do you? No, and well, you should not, for my ally is the Force. I think we've got a Star Wars movie coming out. Isn't that a powerful... There's Yoda. Try not, do or do not. There is no try. Okay, a few things there. So, thank you, Rita. And Candy Lakin is still speaking. So, the... person I spoke to in the congregation, I'll have Margie share a few words because I think this is important, about four of our angels who died over the last couple of years, 2015 and 16, and we memorialized them this morning. Bill Allender, Bill Bryan, Marge Madison, and Tim Fulmer. So, Margie?
Thank you, John. Wow. I have a feeling they're sitting on somebody's shoulders in this room, so I'm going to try to be very accurate. Bill Allender was a beloved pastor here, and I want to say for 16 years, but I don't know for sure that that's true. But back in the 70s, I wasn't attending this church, although I came occasionally. But he and Joanne taught an EST course, I believe, and when that was happening, I would drive by and see there was no parking in the neighborhood. And that seemed to be the way Sundays were, too. He spoke with a kind of authentic authority. I think he worked very hard at delivering a message that could affect and change our lives, our attitudes, and increase our understanding both of our own faith and the faith of others. And years after he had his stroke and had lost a lot of his physical independence, he asked to give a sermon here. And he stood up there with that authority again, that kind of authentic goodness and strength, and spoke from memory because, of course, he couldn't read the notes. And as I understand it, after his wife had taken care of him and his family had taken care of him for quite a while, he asked to go to Autumnwood so that she could have a measure of peace and freedom and rest. And I think, in a way, through his stroke, he lived out some of what he taught others, taught us other things than he realized he might. Marge Madison sat pretty much where Steve is sitting, and would greet everyone with joy. She would come early on Sunday, I think partly to hear what was going on before the service and to have a chance to say hello to everybody and tell us that she wished she could play golf, but her arthritis was kicking up. March was very, very proud of being the longest member of the church, the member for the longest time. And that was before 1951, because I talked with Mary Ann Thurston, her sister, last night, and she joined afterwards. Mary Ann joined in 51. And Marge taught Sunday school. She worked with Girl Scouts. She was very active in this church, but more importantly, she was very loving in this church and knew everyone's name and was a presence of kindness. Bill Bryan was a love. He was devoted to this church and this congregation. I'm sure that if you didn't get to know him, you were very aware of his presence. He spoke as often as he could about things in his family. He was devoted to Clarice, his wife, and to their children and grandchildren. Always seemed gentlemanly, but he always had a twinkle in his eye and a joke for you if you had a moment. And he seemed to live lightly, but I think he cared deeply. When he fell down the stairs, these back stairs, some of you may remember that, when he was 90, and broke one of the vertebrae in his neck, actually cracked it, and was up at Munson for, I'm thinking, 6 weeks. I might not remember exactly. And he asked to have his halo, the thing that was holding his head and his neck together, and his feeding tube removed. He just wanted to be free of all that. And the family was there. And from what I heard, when these things were removed, there was a tense moment, you know. And he finally said, I want a burger and a beer. And that was Bill. Let's see, Ralph, who do you think this is? Tim. Tim Ballmer, yeah.
Fish that he caught, he couldn't hear and he couldn't really speak English, but he would tell me long stories about his fishing trips. I remember one day his mother came in and said, my son is going to come in and buy some waders. I want you to know he wears a size 9. I said, who's your son? She said, Vince. I said, oh, he'll tell me what he wants. He has no problem talking at all. And he would come in and he'd say, I went fishing and I caught this fish. He was this long and he really fought. And it was always a joy to have him come in the store.
When Forrest was going to go visit him in the hospital down in Grand Rapids, he said, how will I communicate? And I said, don't worry, he'll take care of that. So obviously, Tim was an expert and enthusiastic fisherman in all kinds of weather. He loved it, but he went at it with an enthusiasm that he took everywhere he went. And if he was having a conversation with you in Walmart, he was so happy to see you, and he would make sure you understood, whether he was acting it out or writing words or drawing pictures or just communicating. You know, we can communicate sometimes without. And maybe sometimes better without words, I don't know. But he suffered a long time from a kind of cancer that kept retreating and then coming back. And meanwhile, he kept fishing. He was very, very proud of his sons, Vince and Vance, and they of him. He always made sure that his stepfather, Bill Bryan, got to church and came home, even if Tim wasn't able to stay for church, he would come and sit down while Bill finished coffee hour. They're a remarkable family, remarkable men. And Tim loved his wife Mary. He loved this church, and he taught me a lot in terms of communicating, because I'm a so-so signer, and he would laugh sometimes when I got it wrong, and he'd tell me how to do it right. So this is Tim, and I think probably he's feeding all the people, the fish in heaven.
Thank you so much, Margie. To add a few words to what Margie said about Bill Allender, Joanne sent something to us, and she said, in remembering Bill, I have one story to share. It's a warm Sunday. The windows were open. The wind blew his notes off the pulpit. Friends sitting near the front, as they are doing, I suppose, to this day, decided not to get up and get the notes, just to see what he would do. Something I'm sure you'd do with me. No, I don't. I have. It's the breathing that happens between the notes. That's what every musician says. So to listen to the breathing between the notes. But here's what happened. He continued on, and this is how he started his preaching without notes. Those who remember Bill, he didn't have to have a full text in front of him like I do every Sunday. If this were to blow off, I would run down, get it, assemble it, and start preaching again, because extemporaneous preaching is a disaster. You have no idea what would come out of my mouth. Right? So, won't be happening, but that was Bill. In the late 60s, Bill often said that the first Congregational United Church of Christ of Cadillac was the finest 350-member church in the state. And if he had been 10 years older, it would have taken dynamite to have gotten him to move. So all of you should know. These are the words from Joanne, and how Bill and Joanne have always felt about this wonderful church. So I'll just finish up before we move into prayer, but these angels are above and beyond us that we've just heard about, and they continue to influence this congregation, as did Candy. And we remember with Bill Allender and Bill Bryan and Marge Madison and Tim Vollmer their goodness, purity, selflessness, intelligence, and beauty. And therefore, through us, they continue to live and move and have their being. Amen.